Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. So thank you for being here. I'm glad you're here. We're coming into Christmas. I know that's exciting and daunting and stressful in a lot of different ways. It can be trying to figure out the financial hurdles of getting everybody a material gift like we're supposed to do at this time of year. But there's a lot of other values to holidays, like there's family, there's connectivity, there's all these things that we have the opportunity to be fully present in by taking part in it. And that's an idea that we talk about a lot on the show. It's a big buzzword for the new spiritual movements of our time and are embedded in all the old spiritual movements in religiosity and mysticism. It's a very independent act to take presence into our life and to be able to be here and now. There's this ability of our brain to create imaginary stories, you know? Like, and it's not always this malicious act. We daydream. It's very connected to this idea of like daydreaming. You know, when you're just sitting and you might be bored and your mind can travel to crazy different places within your mind, you know? And this is creative and it's artistic. And a lot of the time it's abstractly created, like autonomously. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. It's like, you can lucidly dream, but sometimes your dreams just are fabricated. And it's this mad scramble of details that can be confusing. And that's what happens in daydreaming too sometimes. And my point in bringing up all this weird shit is that I want to spread awareness on our fabrications that we make in our head. I've been calling this idea for myself and my own philosophy, figments. So I played this game a while ago. It was called The Psychonauts, and it was on the Xbox, and it was super fun. It was like a platformer game. And basically you were this like little kid who goes to a psychic summer camp where everybody has superpowers, where they're able to telekinetically move things and telepathically communicate and go into people's heads and have clairvoyance and pyrotechnics and, you know, just all those like cool psychokinetic powers. And whilst in other people's brains, when you were able to insert yourself into them, every person would have like a completely different mental substratum. Like their consciousness would look and appear drastically different. And inside these people's brains would be these like glowy, see-through, ghostly like shapes. And there always just be like a whole bunch of random different shapes. And there'd be like 100 or 200 of them in each level, and you'd have to go find them and get them. And they were figments of these people's imaginations. And my idea isn't exactly that, but I like the word. And that's one of the major parts that has helped me solidify this idea, is just thinking about the video game, you know. But we all have figments of our imagination. We all have different mental substratums and states of consciousness. And within all of our inner worlds, there's like a lot of different types of states of consciousness, a lot of different types of worlds inside our worlds. It's like worlds within worlds. And this differing kind of consciousness from normal consciousness. And this idea for me has really been fertilized by a recent book that I've been reading by a dude named Andrew Weil. I guess I haven't looked up the pronunciation. It's spelled W-E-I-L. He was a prominent figure in the 60s through the 80s and today probably still. He was a medical professional, kind of. He got his degree for medical science and stuff, or I don't know exactly, doctoring at Harvard. And he was going to Harvard at the same time as Timothy Leary and like Richard Alpert and all these people that I really admire and talk about a lot. And he spent a lot of time looking at drug culture, and he was obsessed with altered states of consciousness. And I am too. I've always been obsessed. And he's arguing that we have an appetite for differing consciousness. And whatever this waking state of consciousness is only the normal functional one that we happen to be in most of the time. And so basically, it's like we get bored or almost stuck, like, you know, habitual thinking. And then part of who we are craves to be in a different state of mind and to change it up and to roll the dice and just, but there's a positive and a negative element to that that's not causally related to the chemical or maybe even the activity, because there's activities that we can do to insinuate these different states of consciousness. You know, and so I want to tie that into what I was saying about when we're fabricating all these stories in our head of what is happening or how things ought to be. When we have a judgment call and what when we have a want, when we want something to turn out our way, my way, it's got to turn out this way, a plan, you know? Like, a lot of these things are set up and planned and created inside these figmental echo chambers that are only located in a small area inside of our head. Kind of like a small, tiny box that we decide to put ourselves in, almost, you know? Like, instead of having an outlook of empirical sensation where we can look around us and gauge and then use these sensations to be reasonable, instead, there's this little tiny box and we make all these little sock puppets and masquerades and we put names on them so that they stand in the place for real people in the real world or a real entity or a real challenge. And then we masquerade ourselves masturbatorily and we create fictional ideas of what's going to happen. And that's where these judgment calls come from, because then we want that outcome. You know, we set up a hypothesis in our head. We set up a could be in our head. We run it and then we like it. You know, we do it with people too. You know, we set up versions of other people inside of our head. And I know somebody out here has heard this one, but it's like every person you meet has a differing version of who they think you are in their own head. You know, to Sally, you may appear like this. To Michael, you may appear different. And then Judas might fucking hate you, you know? Like, everybody's going to have a differing version where you're a hero, a saint, or a criminal. You know, like, there's 150 different versions of you walking around in each and every person you've met's head, right? And we do that with people, too. We're inundated with crowds of our loved ones and acquaintances that live in our heads where we've sock puppeted them and made models for real people. And a lot of the times they could be damn accurate. And that's called empathy. You know, if we have a good empathetic muscle and a good sense of ethics and compassion, which is something I want to talk about later, is this idea of connectivity. Like, but when we can care, we can get really good at building a good model, but it's never the exact same thing as the real person. And that real person is a dynamic creature that is perpetually changing from one state to the next and has as diverse of a scape of differing worlds and states of consciousness inside them as you do. And it's amazing to me when I think about it, how beautiful it is to try to figure somebody out and to listen to somebody, to try to get inside their head and to live inside their world is such a valiant and noble act. It takes incredible care. And to me, it sounds incredibly hard. So we set up these figments and these fictions, and some of them are more accurate than others. And then we start to base our lives on them. And I think what happens is that sometimes these models become more real than the world as it is. Our models of people become more real in our heads than they are as dynamic, changing people. And then we get burnt because of this ego-driven idea of relationship that's so incredibly self-centered. It's all existent from this one vantage point, the sense of I, you know, me, 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 me. And that's not terrible. Everybody needs a degree of self-interest. If we did not have any self-interest, we would give away everything. We would never be able to take care of ourselves. There's not an either or a black and white argument when it comes to finding ourself within reason and within mind, and also within the ability to look inside and contemplate. So we can create and manipulate these ideas and these motives and this manipulatory thing. But I think there's another way to focus this inward-driven contemplation. What is contemplation? Meditation. You know, I like the idea of a beam of light here. And this was somewhere I read in another book recently. I can't remember. But it's like there's an ability to practice awareness and to practice focus when it comes to using our awareness. And it's like a beam of light. And when the light is really wide and unfocused, you can spread your light and awareness on a lot of things. And that would be very similar to this waking consciousness, this normal state, default mode network that we find ourselves in, that we habitually set up to get through tedious drivel, which is also part of it. It's incredibly normal. We need those things because if we have a lot of tedious things we got to do, you know, there's a reason why it evolved to go into a default mode. I just think that sometimes we over defaultize it, right? But we can also focus that beam of light intensely. And that's what presence is focusing. You know, there's certain meditative trainings where we have like a candle or some sort of physical thing that we're supposed to look at, like an altar or an idea in the head, you know, visual, walking through a forest, you're on a path, you know, you see a gate, you go through the gate. You know, these are all focuses. And it can get even tighter and tighter. And then it's almost like we can shift the focus from the outside world and we can start to shine the light inside. And that's where discovery happens. That's where exploration lives and exists. That's where the fantastic adventure that discovering who we are is. Okay, so that's a reasonable backdrop for the second part of what I want to talk about now. So, two big words, figment and joy, all right? So I think joy is this new idea I've been playing with. I'm sure it has a lot of other synonyms and a lot of other ideas, ideologies out there. And I'm always looking and collecting from as many different pots and as many different sources, as many different nutritionally available ideas that I can possibly dip my fingers into. And I like this idea of joy for me, and it's something I've been playing with for a long time. And I think it has something to do with soul and Atman and everything I was just talking about too. I think everything is so interconnected. So I feel that joy, contentment, present-mindedness, when we're completely involved, when we can turn the light inward, but then that inward light somehow refracts back because we start to see the outside on the inside. And I know that's very confusing. I know. But at that point, when we step outside of this extreme degree of discursive thinking, of rationalizing and reasoning and making up all these figments, but not to the point of complete amnesia, because to completely disconnect from our subjectivity and to completely go into the world, I'm not sure if we can take back a lot of memories of that it's hard to talk about things that aren't in the world of reason, because speech comes from reason. It comes from trying to communicate ideas, you know? But somewhere in the middle of that, in this middle ground, when we can be completely present and aware of ourself, that individual self, and also be aware of the extreme connection to everything else, there's this blissful state of being that I have experienced intermittently throughout my life, but never in any sort of extreme continuity where it continues. You know, sometimes I've held on to joy for days and days and weeks sometimes. You know, when you meet a new partner and somebody blows your mind with how wonderful and beautiful they seem to be, and you start to fall in love, that connection with that other person, that comes from the state that I'm trying to describe right now. You can use an event or a chemical and get high, or you can get high on a person. And these things can bring these states of joy because of the connectivity, because we're able to step outside of just this extreme degree of self-focus, of thinking we're only this little person inside a little box that we're masquerading puppets around inside our minds. And that's incredibly limiting and claustrophobic. And so stepping outside that little space for a second feels so free, and you can take a deep breath. And that's why I call it joy. But it's not pleasure. It's not euphoria. It's connection. And I think it always exists. It's always there. Even in your deepest struggle, in your deepest pit of pain, inside of you is a seed of that joy, because there's always a door of connecting to this. And the severity of pain becomes from our divorcing from reality. When we see ourselves in suffering, it can be a pitiable situation where we see this creature that's suffering, you know? But sometimes even our suffering leads to developments that we can't even perceive in synchronicity. Not always. I'm not trying to make an argument for suffering or the incredible atrocities that have happened to some people. I'm just saying that it's normal and it exists in the human condition. It's part of it, right? So even in suffering, like last week when I was discussing Sisyphus and his boulder, I think we can find joy even in this extreme degree of discomfort. So how do activities or certain people or drugs or events, happenings, happenstances, all these little happenings trickling down like raindrops, how can these things sometimes be a catalyst for the state of joy where we can feel so disconnected from joy others when we're so isolated and alone? When we've isolated and alone and qualified. So what happens when we find joy again? What I'm trying to argue here is that the event and the happenings or the drug isn't the reason why joy comes, period. And Mr. Andrew Weil was arguing this about drugs too, where all these substances are not causal agents for what is happening in society. There's a lot of people who are misusing and abusing substances now, but he would say that it's not like in the substance itself. There's like, it's not like you're going to do this and then automatically you're going to become a bad person. Some people might become better, maybe not a lot. Some people might not be affected at all, will never touch it down. There's always going to be some people that affects worse. There's this stratification of effects that could happen from an event, a happening, an activity, any of these things, and multiple people could respond differently to it. I'm going to go find a quote to explain this real quick, because I just have a perfect one in mind. All right, so this is from the first chapter from his book, Natural Mind. It's basically explaining what I was trying to say with a much clearer example. Now, suppose we take the trouble to set up formal double-blind experiments on the relationship between being stoned and the ability to tolerate dishwashing. We might study two groups of subjects. One would smoke marijuana and the other a placebo. And neither we nor the subjects would know who was smoking what. We would let each group wash dishes. I can predict with confidence that some persons who smoke marijuana would find that dishwashing was never so easy. Others would find it harder than ever. Most would find it no different from usual. So there's nothing causally related in any of these things that causes things to happen. It's just doorways into different altered states of consciousness within ourselves. And I think the base layer and the foundation of most of these states of being is connectivity. And when we start to tap into that, I think we feel joy. And I think that's where happiness, maybe, or at least not pleasure, but contentment with life, when we find our place with it. And that's something that I've been struggling to find here for a while. You know, I badly would like to maintain these states of connectivity because I seem to vacillate back and forth between feeling connected with my efforts and feeling very isolated. And I've causally applied excuses and said that all these things were the fault that were causing these things to happen. But what I'm coming to terms with myself and with my own philosophy and how I choose to approach my consciousness is that the biggest causal agent is me. We have so much control over which things that we create and what we make happen. And I think with practice, we can go to certain states of mind within us with control and effort, and we can tap into and manifest all these places. You know, that's kind of what I've been thinking about this week. So I hope that gives you something to think about too. I would love to talk to you. I have my email address that is available in the show notes. It's the Gingerbread Man's Dialogues. And we could talk about anything you want, even if you just are having a hard week. I would love to just have a dialogue with you. And there's a Facebook group, not a group, Facebook page for the thing. You can put comments there, whatever you want. Rate, subscribe, do whatever you want. I don't really care. I'm here just trying to help. And all of these efforts are just seriously to try to make a positive impact through my investigations of philosophy and spirituality and psychedelia and introspection. And this is my journey towards discovery of myself. And I hope that there's something relatable in it so that you can be inspired to go look inwards and find you. I think life is a creative, artistic effort. We're like a painting and we choose all of these decisions and things that we focus on and breed awareness, and we make ourselves, and we're changing every day. So we can live creatively and we can look creatively and we can love creatively and unconditionally. So go inspire others and go inspire you. I'm going to go find some books and read a couple quotes. And we'll go see how Odin's doing, and then I'll let you go, and I'll see you next week. This is from a dialogue in Voltaire between Callicratus and Evermere. They're talking about just a lot of stuff, and I just found this part a little witty. Callicratus says, "Tell me then, which is the most stupid and meanest?" Evermere, "The most superstitious." Callicratus, "Why are the superstitious the meanest?" Evermere, "It is because superstition makes most men do out of duty what others do by habit or a fit of madness." Next, I got one from Ram Dass as I started that beautiful book, Paths to God. And he just has an amazing way of saying things. "What often happens when we face the stripping away of our models is that we will give up this and that and instead grab onto that and this. It's too uncomfortable not to have anything to cling to, and so we substitute a new set of attachments for the old ones." Next, I got another one from Voltaire. "My reason tells me God exists, but it also tells me that I cannot know what it is. It is indeed likely that we should know what our soul is when we can form no idea of light, if we had had the misfortune to be born blind. I see then, with regret, that all that has been written about the soul teaches us nothing at all. And last, another one from Mr. Andrew Weil. The ubiquity of drug use is so striking that it must represent a basic human appetite. Yet many Americans seem to feel that the contemporary drug scene is something new, something qualitatively different from what has been going on before. The attitude is peculiar because all that is really happening is a change in preference.
Hello, guys. It's Ask O and the Gingerbread Man.
Oh, boy.
It's been such a long time since we did this.
Yeah, like 2 weeks, huh?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I hope you guys had a good time, and I also can tell you something.
What?
Do you know the sun is actually not yellow?
What is it?
It's actually white.
White?
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's just so bright. That's where you get white light from, huh?
Yeah. That's cool. So, because the sun, what's it called?
Solar system?
No.
Sun?
No, the thing that blocks meteors on Earth.
Asteroid belt?
No. Like the thing.
Atmosphere?
Yeah. Atmosphere, because the atmosphere makes it look like it's actually yellow, but it's actually white.
Super smart. Look how scientific you are.
Yeah.
Are you excited about Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.